Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Seeking Sustainability. And oh, happy Inauguration Day! Like, truly, truly, what a time to be alive. What a day. I watched the inauguration. Hopefully, all of you did too, or at least have been watching clips on social media. And it was incredible. I cried. I'm relieved. It felt like an exhale. And I mean, President Biden's speech, I can't even believe I'm saying that, was incredible. And rightfully, you know, it's presidential, which I don't think we've experienced a presidential speech or a sensible speech in a long time. So we have decency and diplomacy and dignity restored to the White House. So it is a good day. And also, if none of you, or if you didn't hear Amanda Gorman, I think her name was Amanda Gorman, her poem was phenomenal, like incredible. So yeah, definitely look that up if you haven't seen it yet. But this episode, full disclaimer before I get into it, I mentioned my Christmas list in this episode, and that is because, yes, I did film this before Christmas. I actually filmed this, I'm like hesitant to say it, but in November. But I think I had mentioned in my last episode, in full honesty, I haven't been quite as productive with my podcast as I had thought. But in addition to that, I had so many interviews lined up to publish, but I all had done them in like 1 week, and then I just was kind of waiting to publish them. So this one's from a while back, but still just as good and hopefully inspiring and interesting for you guys. It is with Abby Hollis, who I knew of through SCAD. She was another student from my graduating class from the textiles program. And I'd seen on LinkedIn that she had been doing a lot of great work in sustainable fashion and posting a lot about that, and was doing some work with Fashion Revolution, which is a great organization. If you guys aren't familiar with it, I would highly recommend looking it up. And she had started this project called Thread Threads, which I thought was really interesting. She talks about it in the episode a bit, but I'll also link all of that in the description, or the show notes rather. But Thread Threads is a platform for giving voice to designers, makers, consumers, and clothes themselves. Thread Threads is intended to inspire a more intimate relationship with cloth and a greater material stewardship. So it's a really, really cool project that she started. And I'm also going to link her portfolio because she has a really fantastic portfolio that I think if any of you are artists or if not, will enjoy looking at. I think it's always really cool to see what other people are doing, and she's done such great work, and she was a really interesting person to talk to. I always say that, but she was. And yeah, so I hope you guys enjoy the episode as always. Without further ado, let's welcome Abby Hollis to Seeking Sustainability.
And I'm so happy that you agreed to chat with me, because we really haven't had the chance to connect very much. And then I saw the work you were doing through LinkedIn, and I just thought it was so cool. And I was like, oh, I have to reach out to her and talk to her. So yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate the interest.
So my first question that I always ask everyone is, in your opinion, what does it mean to be an environmentalist?
Oof, you're gonna start it off hard.
I know, at 10 a.m.
I would say, I think it is much bigger than what most people think. And to be honest, I'm not sure I would identify myself as an environmentalist. Because as much as I say the word sustainability is overused and a buzzword, and it's gotten to the point where it doesn't really mean anything. Yeah. I think when we back up from what the word sustainability has kind of come to mean, which is almost synonymous with environmentalism, there's a lot to it outside of environmentalism that's super critical to environmentalism. So looking at social issues and looking at financial issues right alongside with environmental issues. So I don't know if that answered the question at all, but yeah, my kind of identity as a within this movement is really trying to look at all of those different parts of it and how they all work together, so that, you know, if we just focus on the environment piece, that's great and we're probably going to make a lot of strides there, but it might not be in the dictionary definition of the word, it might not be sustainable, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely understand, because, like, especially too, I don't know if you felt this, like, having gone to, like, I mean, not to, like, discredit the experience that we've gotten through going to, and, like, an art school, but, like, I've kind of struggled with the idea of, like, am I an environmentalist if, like, I don't have a background in that, and, like, I really don't have, like, academic knowledge in that, so...
Right.
Yeah, I definitely understand. And that's interesting too, because, yeah, I mean, I completely agree that sustainability, especially by the apparel industry and like that word is just thrown out to consumers as like a buzzword. But yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's, yeah, it's also so much a, like, it's not a yes or no, we're sustainable or we're not sustainable. Like, right. There are so many places to be between those two, which, yeah, in the way that it's been used in, like, marketing especially, it's, you know, comes across like that's not the case. Like, brands can say, okay, we're sustainable, check, we did it, we're done, when that's just not really how it works.
Well, also, too, like, what does it even mean? Like, that's like the industry lacks, all industries, but especially the apparel industry, completely lacks any sort of like language or standards that companies have to meet in order to like use that word and call themselves that thing, because it's such a complex issue. And like, yeah, it's like, what does it even mean? Like, what to be sustainable?
Right.
So there's a lot that needs to be fixed in the industry. And I wanted to talk about too, well, actually, before I get into,
You're good.
Just got a phone call. Before I get into asking you about all your projects that you're working on, which are really, really cool, can you just talk about like your background, like who you are, where you're from, and how you became passionate about this work that you do in textiles, and what prompted you to start these projects that you're working on?
Sure. So it's been a bit of a meandering path. I was always really interested in fashion from when I was young. And of course, then I wasn't like super concerned about all of the social and environmental issues in the fashion industry in, you know, elementary school. I just loved it. And then growing up, I was really interested in a lot of different fields, like math and science fields, and was kind of leaning toward those, but of course ended up deciding to pursue this passion that I had always had and this interest in fashion. So that's what brought me to SCAD, where I studied textiles. And then getting more into the fashion industry, I, you know, of course, was looking around and saw all of these issues. And I mean, for me, in the beginning, it wasn't so much like a decision that I want to change the fashion industry. It was more a decision that like I don't want to be a part of the existing or the predominant fashion industry, but I love fashion, and so I need to find another way to do it, right? So that's how I ended up then in the Design for Sustainability program at SCAD, which was great and really opened my eyes to more of the systems side of sustainability. So of course, in the fibers program, that was great to understand the process from raw material to finished product and really make those fashion connections and kind of have the fashion sensibilities that you need to work in the fashion industry at all. But then in those design for sustainability courses, I was working with, you know, UX designers and industrial designers and people from all different fields and really tackling problems from a totally different perspective. And I really loved that and loved kind of melding the two of those. So that's what I'm trying to do now.
Yeah, I think the fact too that like you have that experience to take a tackling sustainability from different, from kind of like different viewpoints and in different ways, I think really makes you stand out too and like sets you forward, because I think a lot of times, I don't know if this is, might be a generalization, but I think in the apparel industry, like, or just like in this thing we call fashion, like there's a lot of people that lack that. And like I was just saying in my last episode, like it's, I think it's really important for fashion students to understand supply chain and understand like production and just things beyond just how to construct a garment or what is a trend, like, because
right,
it is a really complex and massive global industry. So yeah, I think that's amazing that you've learned to approach fashion and apparel from all of those different standpoints.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is super important. And even like the word fashion has become such a like narrow and exclusive thing. Like this is fashion. Like when you think fashion, there's something in your head. And I don't know that there's anyone who thinks fashion and thinks of like the farmers who are growing cotton or linen or whatever it is, or the people who are making the clothes, and like all of that is part of fashion.
I literally have never met anyone that has said that exact same thing, because I was literally, you should listen to my last episode, because I say that exact thing, because I had a revelation like a few months ago and I was like, I feel like the word fashion is all wrong for this, these conversations, unfortunately, because anyone who hears the word fashion thinks of like a niche industry that's like just designers, and it's just located in like New York and London and LA, and like it's like editorial like kind of stuff, and it's yeah, very niche and small and exclusive. And I thought that going into SCAD, but really it's this massive, massive, massive global industry that includes everything from the socks you get at Kmart to a designer garment. So yeah, I completely agree. And I think educating people on that too, which kind of goes into the story of your garment, the story of your cloth, which is like what Thread Threads is about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you talk about Thread Threads?
Sure. So
it's so cool.
It is a project that I kind of came up with the idea last winter, and have been working on it at, you know, different levels of intensity, depending on what else is going on since then. And essentially, it's a platform, like you said, for telling the story of your clothing. So our goal is to kind of track all of the hands that it goes through from, in an ideal world, from the person who grew those fibers or created those fibers through, you know, people who designed it, the people who actually make it, put it together, the first-hand consumer, the second-hand consumer, and so on. So really putting all of those human stories in it so that whoever gets it next can access those stories and really relate to the piece in a way that is, you know, less just, I'm buying this to look trendy and cool for right now, and more like I really feel connected to this piece and I want to make it last and I want to love it, and when I'm done loving it, I want to make sure that it finds a good home for someone else because I have this emotional connection to it.
Yeah, so when I came across like what I went on your portfolio, which looks fantastic by the way,
yeah.
And when I watched your, and the video was like really good, I was like, this is like so on point. But it was, I loved it because it, what you're doing is really like, it totally is kind of like a conceptual manifestation of like things that like I've thought about too, but there was nothing that existed that really like told the story of your garment and like tracked where it came from, like not truly. And one of the aha moments that I had personally was realizing that we don't see the faces of the people that make, that touch our clothing. Like we don't know who those mothers are, or we don't know who those young people are who are students and have hopes and dreams. And we don't know who grows that cotton. And most companies also don't even know. Like it's the supply chain of apparel is so murky and muddled. And so yeah, Thread Threads is brilliant. And that's so incredible that you're doing that. I was like really, really excited when I saw it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Do you have any like, so like, where are you now with Thread Threads, like in the process of creating it? Because I know working on something like that takes a long time and a lot of trial and error. And like, what are your goals and hopes for it moving forward? Like, what do you want it to be ideally?
Sure. So I'm still in pretty early stages. I've been working with a web developer to, well, I'll go into kind of what it is on a more tangible sense first. So essentially there's two parts to it. So one is the tag that goes on clothes that has a unique serial number on it. And then the other part would be the interface online. So you just go in and punch in that serial number. And then at that point, it would bring up all the past stories and you would have the option of adding more stories to it. So to answer your question, I've been working with a web developer and we have kind of a pretty bare bones V1 demo interface that we're playing around with right now and still finalizing the tags themselves. I'll tell you that is a part of it that is much more difficult than I anticipated, especially, of course, adhering to all of the sustainability-related things that I want to, which obviously is important to me. Yeah. So really, that's getting the tags nailed down and finding the perfect way to make the tags where they're durable. You know, the serial number won't come off, but they're also made in a way that is responsible and made of materials that I feel good about putting into the world. That's the main big step now. And then I'm hoping to kind of start to roll it out with smaller brands or even vintage boutiques. So maybe not at the like original firsthand brand level quite yet, but looking more at these smaller markets to kind of test it out and refine the interface and the tags and the logistics of it all. And then, you know, eventually I would love to see them, I would love to partner with brands that are producing new original product so that, you know, when you go and you buy something new, it comes with a Thread Threads tag on it and it starts that story from the very beginning and can then track it throughout its whole life.
I could 100% see Patagonia partnering with you one day. That's like a Patagonia thing. Like I could totally see that.
Hey Patagonia, if you're listening, call me.
I could like truly, I know that's a lofty but attainable for one day goal. I think like that to me, I mean, everyone thinks of Patagonia when they think of like sustainable, but like really like that, I think what you're doing, I could completely see Patagonia getting on board with because they really talk about everything from agriculture to like what happens when your clothes are tattered. And yeah, I think that's so cool. So do you have any like dream brands or designers that you would like love to partner with in the future?
So I'm really still kind of trying to figure out exactly what the right market for it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, putting all of that reasonable business sense aside, obviously, like you mentioned, Patagonia would be awesome. And there are a lot of really, I've done some work before with some smaller artisan brands. So working with Indigenous artisans in different communities to produce, you know, fashion products. And that market, I mean, obviously most of those brands aren't like as huge like Patagonia, but that's somewhere where I would really love to partner with brands like that, just because there's such a rich story there. And I think it's one that's really important to tell.
Yeah, you could do like the Citizenry or like Ocelot Market or 10,000 Villages, mm-hmm. or Tribe Alive would be a really good one. Yeah, there's so much potential there. That's so exciting. And also like, well, actually, this is kind of like backtracking, but this thought popped into my head. When you were starting to navigate this like realm of sustainability and textiles, did you have like an aha moment that really changed your perspective on the industry?
I don't know that it was, well, kind of. It, not a singular moment, but
right, yeah.
Really, I think being in the textiles program and working like in the fashion world in such an intimate and really slow way, and in a way that was kind of in between raw material and finished product, you know, being in textiles,
yeah,
I really got a more personal like understanding of the process, and I really started to fall in love with the process and the slow process and figuring out where my material is coming from and, you know, constructing textiles myself that had a rich story already. And that's when my own behavior as a consumer really changed, when I, you know, would as so. Before that, you know, I would go maybe to a store and I knew it wasn't sustainable, but I would still be tempted, right? Because it was, I liked the clothes and yeah. I was like, I know I shouldn't buy this, but it was hard. But then when I stopped, you know, feeling guilty about those things and rather really fell in love with this other side of fashion, this storytelling side of fashion and the sustainable fashion world, that's when I like, those other things didn't really appeal to me as much anymore, you know? Like, those garments really were less valuable to me because of the story that they told or the lack of a story that I could access. And that was really the what clicked for me, right, was there are so many people out there kind of pointing fingers saying, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong. Consumers, stop shopping here because they're horrible people and they're blah 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 doing whatever, and all of that is important, and educating consumers of course is important, but at the end of the day I think like people are really going to change when there's a value proposition for them that isn't just don't feel guilty, right? Because people can turn that off. People can stop reading why they shouldn't shop at X, Y, and Z, and then you're left with nothing. I think you have to sell people on like what's so awesome about sustainable fashion. And that's of course where Thread Threads kind of came from.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I think anyone who's like tried to shop like air quote like more sustainably has experienced that, of like that guilt of, oh my gosh, should I not buy this? Like, am I a bad person for buying this? And I think that's really incredible that you've kind of flipped it on its head and instead have been like, here's this piece that has a story that I can see and feel and wear. Yeah. How have you navigated that guilt with shopping? Like, what are your, I don't know if this makes sense, but like, what are your shopping habits now? Mm-hmm. Do you mostly shop secondhand? Do you shop for more like expensive, like sustainable brands?
I I'm trying to think. I haven't shopped much in quarantine. But yeah, I do shop mostly secondhand, and then occasionally, you know, if I see something wonderful that I think would last me a long time and be timeless, from one of the sustainable brands, or there's a couple local boutiques around where I live that stock a lot of those brands that I love and feel good about buying from. So I'll, yeah, splurge on those occasionally, which, you know, works out because my spending on some items goes down shopping secondhand, and then I have a little bit more for those sustainable brands.
Yeah, I think it's a hard pill to swallow too. Because once upon a time people didn't buy things constantly. Like they would save up and buy this like one thing, and now our perception of value has just totally switched. Where like we see something that's $200, and we're like, oh my gosh, like that's insane. Mm-hmm. And like I by no means am telling anyone to go spend that money, because like to be in the position where you have $200 to spend is totally privileged. But like it also is like, I think, yeah, if you change your perception of clothing and your perception of value and your perception of the story behind clothing, then like that money is, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like instead of buying 10 random things at wherever, I'm not gonna name drop any because that's not in my, it's not what I do, but you know, instead of buying 10, we'll say fast fashion pieces, you can buy one, air quote again, sustainable, responsible, whatever you want to call it, piece that will last a lot longer. And I mean, it really is, in my book, about more than how it's made, and also about how you're going to use it, right? Yeah. So even thinking about some of those fast fashion pieces, if that's what's, you know, if you have a job interview tomorrow and you need something professional that you can't find secondhand and all you can afford is that, then there's still like a spectrum of sustainability within that world where it's like, here's this really trendy thing that I like right now, but maybe I choose this other thing that's more timeless and I'm going to wear it more. And even that, even if it's coming from somewhere that isn't necessarily the best place, that's still a more sustainable decision.
Yeah, like getting actual wear and use out of your pieces. I have things from Forever 21, quite frankly, that I got in like high school and I still wear them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wanted to ask too, I saw in your portfolio that you, I think it said in like your About Me video that you were working to create kind of a textile community from, you're from Arkansas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, within your community. And it reminded me of, have you heard of Fiber Shed?
Yes.
Is that kind of what you're doing? I'm interested to hear about that too.
Mm-hmm. So yes, Fiber Shed is definitely a huge inspiration. And yes, so I'm from Northwest Arkansas, which is, I mean, my friends make fun of me because I talk about it so much, but it's really a awesome region, and Arkansas in general is just really kind of an incredible mix of industries and people. There's like within an hour from where I live in Fayetteville, Arkansas, there's farmers and there's craftspeople, and there's the headquarters of Walmart, right? So there's like a ton of money. And then there are farmers who, you know, aren't making so much money, but they are making these like obviously super valuable resources. And there's just a lot going on in this area around art, mostly funded by the Walton Foundation, which is the Walmart family. So really, I just see this area as being really full of potential and full of like all of these different parts of a textile system, but they're not like making those connections. Like there are people growing cotton, there are people raising sheep, there are people spinning yarn, there are people weaving, there are brands who are like making their own clothing in the area. There's plenty of money to go around, thanks to, you know, Walmart and J.B. Hunt and all of, and Tyson, all of these huge corporations are headquartered around here. And yeah, so I'm really in early stages of that, but kind of working with some farmer friends that I've made have been super generous in letting me come out and, you know, see their operation and take some of their wool, and I've been spinning it and just kind of exploring.
That's amazing. Well, I think too, like, move, like, I think the future, hopefully, that, like, is really of textiles, hopefully, is localization. And that's really what, like, Fiber Shed works to do. And I think that's amazing too, because, like, most communities that we grew up in, even if we don't see it when we're younger, are really rich in different people and artists and people with different professions. And I think seeing the potential in that area and being passionate about your community is, like, amazing. And that's really inspiring. And I love that.
Thank you. It's a easy place to be passionate about. People, this is my Fayetteville ad. No, people often overlook Northwest Arkansas, but it's a really good place that, yeah, I love, and I'm obviously am passionate about where it's
amazing.
Headed.
I wish I like, it makes me want to go to Arkansas, honestly. Yeah, I'll go visit. That's really, really cool. And that's awesome that you're doing that. I wanted to ask too, like, where do you see the textile industry going, or where do you hope that it goes moving forward?
I think something that's really important to me is kind of a diversity of solutions, right? So, you know, I'm tempted to say all natural, local, everything for everyone, you know, bring it back to how it was hundreds of years ago.
Right.
But at the same time, there are all of these new problems and new innovations that we have that I think are really important to address moving forward, right? So, like, the plastic problem is something that we need to think about, whether that's recycling plastics into clothes. I'm not so sure, because, you know, we got the microfiber situation. That's a little, don't love that, but I don't know. That's my answer. I think there's a ton of solutions out there, and a ton of ways to move forward. What I'm really passionate about, obviously, is that storytelling and that transparency, so that in whatever the solution is, consumers have access to the information that they need to make the right choice. So I don't know if that answers the question.
Yeah, no, I think, like, I always say that, like, no, I completely agree. I always say that it's, like, it's not a one-dimensional issue. It's so multifaceted and complex, so you have to have, like, a multifaceted approach. Like, there's no, I remember in one of my classes, one girl was like, recycling, like, is the answer. Like, it's, like, the singular solution. And I was like, your face. And I was like, there is no singular solution.
Yeah. Like, especially recycling.
And I mean, that's a whole other can of worms, like, issue in itself that, like, I can't even wrap my head around. But yeah, it's not like, you just can't approach it in, like, a linear way.
Yeah.
Because it's not a linear issue. It's like a insane, intricate web of problems. And it's, and also too, when you were saying, like, part of you wants to be like, oh, let's just go back to how it was hundreds of years ago, but then at the same time there's, like, innovations happening. I suppose, like, the realization I've come to is, like, it, I feel like ideally it's, like, having a balance of, like, looking to the past but also, like, embracing innovation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things that I've kind of been thinking about recently is Yeah, this idea that, like, right now we kind of romanticize the past, right? And we're like, fast fashion ruined everything. Let's just go back to making our own stuff. But, like, yeah, we have to acknowledge that there were a ton of problems even before fast fashion. And some of those problems fast fashion, quite frankly, solved, right? Like, fast fashion made the clothing you need to be successful, accessible to people that it wasn't accessible to before. And that's huge. And that's something that, like, we have to talk about when we're thinking about what's next and what we want the industry to look like in the future. You know, it can't just be like, turn off fast fashion, because there's still so many problems then. And problems, yeah, like I said, that we bring back, that fast fashion, as much as it hurts to say, problems that fast fashion has solved.
Yeah, I mean, that's super interesting. I've never heard anyone approach it like that. And that kind of goes to, like earlier when you were saying how, like, sustain, like, the solution of sustainability is, like, also really, really intertwined with, like, socioeconomic problems. And, like, I mean, when you talk about, like, intersectional environmentalism, it's, like, the same thing where, like, you can talk about all these different solutions, but then you also need to acknowledge the fact that there's, like, racial injustice and, like, environmental injustice and socioeconomic problems globally and domestically that affect all of these things. Yeah. But that's really interesting. I've never really heard anyone, like, approach it like that. That's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not, yeah, fast fashion hasn't totally solved those problems, but, you know, it's gotten moved a little bit closer in some ways.
Yeah, yeah, and I wanted to ask too, are there any, like, brands or companies that you love that are being, I mean, it's hard to say transparent, like, yeah. But I guess, yeah, from your perspective, are being, like, conscious and transparent?
I don't know. It's hard. I'm always a little bit hesitant to name brands just because things are kind of always changing. Yeah. And I try to stay away from giving brands, you know, check marks and saying y'all are good to go for forever.
Yeah.
But trying to think, one of my favorite brands that's kind of come up here in the last few years, and they're pretty small and kind of still figuring out, I think, exactly where they sit within the sustainability world, but they make really awesome, they are, you know, getting into that and thinking about those things and making progress in sustainability that I would rather see progress than, like, a brand being stagnant in that area. Yeah. But anyway, they make really beautiful stuff that's, like, funky enough to be unique, but funky in a way that's not, sometimes it's a little trendy, but if you find the right pieces, they're pretty timeless and seem like things that will last a long time. Anyway, I'm just gonna spit it out. Paloma Wool.
Oh, I love Paloma Wool.
Yeah.
Paloma Wool's fantastic. I really, it's expensive, but it's not, like, astronomical.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It's a good Christmas wish list item.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. My mom texted me about my Christmas wish list and she was like, all of these are, like, flax brands from Lithuania, or, like, these are, like, really, like, weird niche brands. I don't feel comfortable ordering from. And I was like,
oh, that's funny.
But Paloma Wool, I mean, it's kind of, like, comparable to, like, I don't want to say it's a less, it is less expensive than, like, Lauren Manoogian is, like, a knitwear brand that's, like, super, super, super high end, that it's, like, so high end. And then Lauren Manoogian, and then Michaela Gregg is one. Yeah, but Paloma Wool is a really cool brand. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would love some things from Paloma Wool.
That's, yeah, they make some really fun stuff.
Are they're based out of Arkansas?
No. They're based in, I think, in Spain.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then I wanted to ask, my closing question that I always ask everyone is, it's another kind of like lofty esoteric question, but as an individual and an environmentalist or activist or advocate for sustainability, what gives you hope for the future?
Oh boy. I see in more recently in sustainability, there have been some changes in messaging that I think have been really important. So kind of like I mentioned before, for a long time, sustainability was about making people feel bad and being angry at them for not doing what you want them to do. And more recently, of course, some of that still exists, but I've started to see a shift away from that and more toward making sustainability something that's attractive in its own right. So that brings me hope for sure. And then also in the sustainability world, I've seen a lot of collaboration and people in this, I don't want to say industry, but in this world of sustainability are always seem to be very open to talking even to their competitors, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And saying, you know, what's working for y'all, what can we adopt, and really working together. And I think that that is what has to happen for this to move forward at the rate that it needs to, right? Yeah, so I've been impressed with that and with efforts even to connect like different stakeholders within sustainability to get them where they need to go and then also where, you know, the world needs to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that makes me think, like, I think it was last year, the sustainability summit in Copenhagen that happens annually. I'm pretty sure, I forgot who it was that said this, but like someone who was kind of leading the summit, it might've been someone from Patagonia, said to these companies, like, we cannot compete with one another. Like, we have to work together. This has to be like if you find a solution individually as a company, like, you need to share that information with the industry. Like, it needs to be a collaborative effort to, like, yeah, because it's issues that are bigger than this industry.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that idea kind of like goes, like, works well with this idea that sustainability shouldn't be a value proposition. It should be a standard, right? So, like, with that mindset, it's easier to collaborate on the sustainability side of things because, like, that shouldn't be what you're selling. That shouldn't be your edge against your competition, right? You should be awesome and cool and have your own value proposition aside from just, like, the basics of what you need to do to not destroy the environment or destroy people's lives.
Thank you again, everyone, for tuning into this episode of Seeking Sustainability. If you enjoyed this episode or any others that you've listened to, then make sure to follow the podcast on whatever platform you're tuning in from. Also, to stay connected, you can follow the podcast Instagram at seekingsustainability_podcast and my personal Instagram at julia.planford. As always, feel free to reach out to me regarding any questions, comments, or episode requests. And of course, share this podcast with anyone who you feel might be interested in learning a bit more about environmentalism and sustainability as well. Thanks, everyone, and I will talk to you guys soon.